You're listening to Cold OD Messianic Congregation's weekly podcast. Our services are every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. For more information, like us on Facebook or visit our website at coldod.org.
Turn with me to 1 Samuel 29, if you would. And this chapter's narrative actually resumes from chapter 28, verses 1 and 2. So remember, last week was that really interesting situation of Saul going up to a medium, conjuring up Samuel the prophet, and we talked about that. But the first two verses were about David and the Philistines, and this continues, so it's like that's a parenthesis, and here's the continuation of that story, and it shows once again how God's favor is upon David. God works through the Philistine commanders who mistrust him to keep him from having to fight against his own people. We read of two dialogues in this chapter, the first between the Philistine officers and Achish, King Achish, and the second between Achish and David. So really, a theme for this, a title might be the guiding hand of God's providence, because we see God's hand intervening. Has God ever intervened in your life in a way that you didn't anticipate? This is what happens here, and it's an amazing story that really speaks to us and has lessons for how God works in our lives as well, where Achish sends David back to Ziklag. So remember, David had left the land of Israel, the promised land, not because Adonai told him to, but out of his own lack of trust in the Lord. Most likely out of exhaustion and desperation. And remember, Saul is chasing him. He keeps eluding him, and God intervenes. God, rescues him, delivers him through miracle situations again and again. But David is getting tired of this, and he makes a decision. Remember how it was phrased in chapter 27, verse 1. It doesn't say the Lord spoke to David and said to do it. It just says David said in his heart. And he decided to leave the promised land and probably had an imaginary scenario of fear and negativity filling him. And the thought that he had of this should have taken captive to the obedience of Messiah, we mentioned when we talked about that, 2 Corinthians 10:5, but he didn't. And so it was reasoning rather than trusting, similar to what Abraham did. David traveled into enemy territory, in this case, Philistia. So look at the first few verses here, and we see where we read earlier in the responsive reading, the Philistines have all their armies at Aphek, and while the Israelites were camping, they're getting closer and closer to the Jewish people, to the Hebrews, to the Israelites, camping by the spring of Jezreel, and the Philistine lords are proceeding ahead, they're hundreds of thousands. And David and his men were bringing up the rear with Achish. And then the Philistine commander said, "What are these Hebrews doing?" So yeah, there's a little picture of where this was transpiring. And what do we got? Keep going there. Okay, there's, look at that picture. Can you picture the armies? That's the Philistines. That's what they looked like. No. Okay, no, not really. Yeah, we know they didn't have cameras then, believe it or not. No, I think that's China. It's China, Chinese army. So, but just get a picture. Thousands of, they're all there. And let's go to the next one. And so here's what they said. They said, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" These are the Philistine lords, the Philistine commanders. They're upset. "What are they doing here?" Perhaps the commanders knew of the previous incident where the Hebrews turned on the Philistines in battle after being on their side, and they fought for Israel. Back, it's chapter 14, verse 21, where that happened. And so when they're saying, "What are these Hebrews?" The Hebrew is Avrim, Ha'ele. Really just, "What are these Hebrews?" And so it's a derogatory usage, sort of like if someone says, "The Jews." It sounds to Jews today very derogatory. It's like the Jews. That's why we usually say the Jewish people of our people. So, in terms of, now if you're among Jews among Jews, they can, you know, talk a little differently. But it sounds, you know, or it might be sort of like saying, oh, what about, who are these migrants? And, you know, the word Hebrew, aver, is to cross over, comes to cross over. So who are these migrants that just crossed over? They crossed from the other side, from the river, or crossed the river. It's a derogatory usage, really, of the word. And Achish, in verse, follows this and says to these his Philistine commanders, no, that's David, servant of Israel's King Saul, and he's been with me today for over a year. There's all sorts of different ways of understanding how long he was there and how his usage of the term, not necessary to go into. But he says, I've not found any fault in him since the day he defected to me until now. So David, who walked in his integrity, Psalm 101, verse 2, is a psalm where David talks about his integrity. And what happens in verse 4, the Philistine commanders get furious, and they said to him, make this man go back to his place you assigned him. He must not go down with us to the battle, for in the battle he'll become our adversary, which is, by the way, the word Satan, where we get, you know, Satan, the adversary, same word. And he might become our adversary. And how would his fellow appease his lord? How would wouldn't this be the heads of our men? He'll kill us. Isn't this the one David said about whom they were singing dances, saying, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. So remember that, of course. They were understandably furious that this hero of the Hebrews who'd killed Goliath and won sweeping victories against them would now be trusted to be in their ranks. They're upset over this. And how about the way they remember that song? They knew that song. There was a song going around. A good song lives on, doesn't it? David has killed his thousands. I'm sorry, Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000s. And they know the lyrics of it, then they know the soon, David's past victory over their people. The lyrics, it's mentioned in 18:7 and 21:11. And so, boy, when you write a song, you know, songs stick in your mind whether you like them or not, don't you? That's the thing about listening to songs. So careful what music you listen to. It's going to be there for a long time to come. I wish I could erase all the Beatles songs that were in my head from before I knew the, you know, a lot of them are good now, but, you know. But look at, isn't this amazing? So David, they're telling him he has to go back. Now I want you to think about what's happening here, how God closes doors in our lives. You know, him who shuts and no man can open. He opens, no man, he has the keys of David. Revelation 3:7, the Holy One, the True One, has the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, and who shuts and no one opens. And it says in 2 Peter 2:9, therefore the Lord certainly knows how to rescue the godly from trials. The Philistines' rejection, one way of phrasing it, is the Philistines' rejection was Adonai's protection for David. You say, why was that? Because David would die? No, not necessarily. Because David's in a dilemma. Is he going to fight against his people? Now, do you think he would have? I don't personally think, but we don't know. But the point is, many believe he would have actually tried to do something to defeat the Philistines secretly, you know, by being up, you know, in the battle. But it was a dilemma for him because he was being loyal and faithful to Achish. Although, remember, not killing his own people, not fighting his own people. He had deceived the king earlier, and the king thought he's fighting his battles for him. David is staying a distance away, and David is actually fighting other enemies of the Jewish people, as well as the Philistines, and he's winning the battles, and the king thinks he's fighting for him. But it's a dilemma. And so God closes the door. We'll talk about that more in a minute. But look at verse 6. Achish calls, and he summoned David and said to him, this is really cool. Look at this, verse 6. He said to him, as Adonai lives, you've been upright and going out, and you're coming in with me in the army. In the army, they're pleasing in my eyes, for I've never found fault with you. The Hebrew is Chai Adonai. Let's say Chai Adonai. Chai Adonai. He's saying, Adonai lives. The Lord lives. The Lord lives. This is God's name, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, the Tetragrammaton, the four-letter name of God. This is God, the God of Israel. Did he become a believer through David? I think so. My opinion. I think maybe he did. He's confessing him, and then he says a little later on, he says, you're an angel of God. Now that could be Elohim, can be translated Hamalach. Elohim could be angel of gods, but messenger of the gods, but we think he's really talking about the God of Israel. And I think he became, through his friendship with David and observing David and seeing David's life, became a believer in David's God, the true God, the one God, the God of Israel. Do we realize that we are being observed? You and I are on display. We are witnesses by our very presence, our words, our actions, often without realizing it. David was a close and trusted associate and friend to Achish. Now here are some verses about that that I'd like to give you. Luke 7:34, Yeshua was mistakenly referred to as a glutton. Is it not true? He wasn't. But they mistakenly, they said he's a glutton, a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. And that's because he lived among them as one who served. He said, I'm among you, in Luke 22:27, as one who serves. He was among them. We're a testimony. We are living letters, 2 Corinthians 3, verses 2 and 3. You are our letter, written on our hearts, known and read by everyone. Written not with ink, but with the Ruach, the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. As someone has said, sum that verse up, say, you may be the Bible that someone has never read or will never read, you and I. And we're living God's living letters. Romans 1:8, here's an interesting verse. Paul says, I thank my God through Messiah Yeshua for you all because your faithfulness is made known throughout the whole world. Yeshua said, let your light shine before men so they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Here's another one. Keep your conduct, 1 Peter 2:12, keep your conduct honorable among the Gentiles. That's what David did. Then while they speak against you, as evildoers, they may, from noticing your good deeds, glorify God in the day of visitation. One more, 1 Corinthians 4:9, I always like this one. God has put us, Paul says, the emissaries, the apostles, on display. He says, we are a spectacle to the world, both to angels and to people. We are always being watched by the visible and the invisible universe. That word spectacle is theatron in the Greek. It's like where we get the word what from? Theater from. We're on display, visible and invisible. Angels are watching. 1 Peter 1 talks about the angels looking into things. And so we're being observed. And David is, through his life, not just being perfect, but because of his integrity of his heart, God uses him, I think, to bring King Achish to faith in the God of Israel. And so what happens? So the soldiers, the commanders went out, right? They persuade, they will not have David among them. Whether they're afraid of David, they seem to be afraid of turning him. Some say they were jealous of David because he was so great, but such a warrior. But it seems like that they were just afraid of him betraying them and turning on them. And Achish stands up for David and says he's a great guy. He's trusted. He's my, he was my armor. He's my bodyguard, really. He'd made him. And he said, but he tells David, verse 7, so now turn around and go back in peace, and you won't be doing anything to displease the Philistine lords. David objects in verse 8. But what have I done? David said to Achish. What have you found in your servant from the day that I've been before you till this day that I should go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king? And Achish answers again, I know, he says, you are pleasing in my eyes as an angel of God. Nevertheless, the Philistine commanders have said, he must not go up with us to the battle. So now rise up early in the morning, get your stuff together, your servants with you, and as soon as you rise early in the morning, once the light, there's light at dawn, in other words, of course, leave and return. And so David rose up and returned with his men, returned to the land of the Philistines. It seems as though David pretended to be offended here in verse 8, in emphasizing his loyalty to Achish. You know, like he's saying, why do I have to go back? What have I done wrong? It seems like he's a great actor and acting it out. Because inside he's shouting, yes! Yes, I don't have to fight against my people now. But that's, you know, it's possible David was truly upset. We don't know. Maybe he's relieved. Was he relieved or was he humiliated? We don't know. Maybe this was a strategy, another idea, to actually get all the men, all his other men out, because it was just him they were going to send back initially. This is the idea. But it seems as though he was pretty good at playing that role here. But inward, he really knows God has delivered him. And four times that, by the way, that phrase is used, David is called an angel of God, described like as an angel of God. 1 Samuel 29:9 here, and then 2 Samuel three times, chapter 14 and 19. But so they go back to Jezreel, where the Israel army was encamped. Now, let's bring some of this home. Do we realize how many times God has intervened in our lives to prevent us from a great dilemma? Or even worse, from doing something we would forever regret? Maybe that too. So, doing something that you would regret, don't worry about it, it happens to be three more times with it. So it's happened to all of us. Something we would regret. He solved the problem for David here, and he's done it for you and for me before. Solve the problem when we're deliberating about it or praying about it or worrying about it. And we call that divine providence, don't we? By this act, God also allowed David to be back in time. We'll find this out next week. To rescue his army's families who'd been abducted from Ziklag. Amazing chapter. I can't wait. I love chapter 30. It's amazing. And if he hadn't been forced to return now, he probably would never have been able to rescue. He wouldn't have been able to rescue the families in time. So here are these verses. Listen to these verses from Proverbs 16, 20 and 21. 16, 1 and 9, 20, 24, and 21, 1. The plans of the heart belong to man, but the tongue's answer is from Adonai. The heart of man plans his course, but Adonai directs his steps. The heart of man, let's back up, please. Let's see. Oh, well, never, go forward. Yeah, there we go. Let's park there. Adam, let's say Adam for man. There's two words used, and then below is Gever. Gever, yeah. In both words for man. And the first one, this is the heart of man plans, it's chashav, he thinks his course, but the Lord directs. The word kun is the root, like kun there, kun is the root. It means he establishes, fixes, or makes firm his steps. David had his plans, but God is the one that overrided and did it differently. David thought he was going to have to fight. He knew how he was going to get out of it. He's just going forward. A man's steps are directed by Adonai. How then can anyone understand his way? That's 20:24. And that's Gever, a man's steps. Gever is a mighty man. It's a man in all of his potential. Adam is from Adama, the ground. Dom, red, the red earth, you know. And whatever it is, God takes whatever case we're in, whether we're in, you know, perfect, whether we're doing great or where we're not doing great, and he can work things together for his plan and for something good. The king's heart is like a stream of water in the hand of the Lord. He directs it wherever he wants, 21:1. God is in control. Jeremiah 10:23 is this. I gave the wrong verse in the responsive reading. I gave 24. It's 10:23. I want. I know, Lord, listen to this one. I know, Adonai, that a man's way is not his own, nor does man as he walks direct his steps. Or Ephesians 1:11-12. In him we also were chosen, predestined according to his plan. He keeps working out all things according to the purpose of his will, so that we who were first to put our hope in the Messiah might be for his glorious praise. It's not how we think things should go, it's how God wants them to go, how he knows it should go. David had left the place he should have been. He was in a place he did not belong, doing something he should not be doing. He'd stepped out of the will of God. How would he maintain loyalty to Achish serving in the Philistine army while somehow helping his people in the battle? Well, God solved the problem for him. 2 Timothy 2:13 says, if we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. I don't know how many times I've gone back to that verse, read that verse, quoted that, claimed that verse in the Lord. If we are faithless, he is faithful. He cannot deny himself. You are himself. You belong to him. Once you, if you're his, we belong to him. And he can. And Psalm 37:23, from the Lord, a man's steps, Geber here, a man's steps are made firm when he delights in his way. Truly, we can see what happened here in David's life is where sin increased, grace increased or overflowed even more, Romans 5:20. As a matter of fact, in Messiah, God was reconciling the world to himself, not counting their trespasses against them, and has entrusted this message of reconciliation to us in 2 Corinthians 5:19. Sin abounded, sin increased, grace much more abounded. It's thought that Psalm 139 was possibly composed by David during this time. Lord, you have searched me or scrutinized me, and you've known. Lord, you know my down. You know everywhere. I go in that direction. You know the Psalm 139, amazing. Though I go to the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand will lead me. It's thought, many of the rabbis believe that it's this period that when David wrote Psalm 139. So in conclusion, let me just say this. This is just me. We make stupid decisions sometimes. Just me, and I know none of you have ever done. We make stupid decisions, but God can override them. He can override them. Are there consequences? Yes, yes. But irreparable? Unredeemable? No. Is God able to incorporate, think of it, I don't know how to phrase it right, some of you that are artists could do painting artists, but the bad strokes, the bad brush strokes, can he incorporate those into a beautiful painting? God can. He can, and he does. Can he orchestrate the sour notes? I have written songs, I could say, but the wrong notes, the off-key notes, into a gorgeous piece of music? He can, and he does. Yes, yes, he does. Romans 8:28, now we know that all things work together for good, for those who love God, and David did, and I know you do, or you wouldn't be here today. Those who love God, who are the called according to my purpose, his purpose, right? And Philippians 1:6, hadn't thought of this one in a little while too. I am sure of this very thing, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of the Messiah Yeshua. Aren't you glad for that? He who began a good work in you will complete it, will perfect it until the day of the Messiah Yeshua. That's what God did for David. What's he doing with those Philistines? But he's got himself in a mess. And this was a really big dilemma, this part of it. I mean, this is it. He's going to have to fight with them. The battle, he was able to maneuver out of it before. He was like Jacob, you know, able to keep maneuvering out of things. But now it came to big thing. And we don't know how much he prayed, but I'm sure a lot. I'm sure he was crying out to God, and God intervenes and uses these Philistine commanders to make him leave and go back, and we'll see in the next week, we'll see in chapter 30 how important that was in terms of what had happened to back in where he was staying in Ziklag. Father, we thank you.